DW Deutsche Welle. Spectrum.
Die internationalen Raumstation im Jahr 2018 den Namen Horizons tragen wird.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Spectrum, coming to you from the European Space Agency's Astronaut Center in Cologne, Germany. I'm Jessie Wingard. What you just heard there is Germany's first International Space Station commander, Alexander Gerst, revealing the name and logo of his next mission to the ISS in 2018. Well, with me to talk about his Horizons mission is the man himself, Alexander Gerst. Alexander Gerst, first German commander of the ISS, welcome to Spectrum.
Thank you.
What's so special about this mission that's going to launch in 2018?
Well, I would say all space missions are special in that they allow us to firstly see our home planet from a very different perspective. That's something that we cannot otherwise do. And we all know that sometimes taking a step back and looking at a problem or a thing with some distance can actually help us to understand it much better and understand solutions much better. Then we do science on board the ISS that is not possible anywhere on Earth. Like, even with all the money you could possibly find, with all the effort you could possibly do, there are some experiments that you will not be able to do on Earth. And that's why we have this fantastic laboratory out there in space that allows us to do, for example, material sciences experiments that allow us to understand materials much more than we can produce those materials afterwards on Earth once we've understood them really well, and then make, for example, more fuel-saving turbines for airplanes and therefore like improve life on Earth massively. And that is a big reason of why we fly to space. And so you can say that all space missions are very special in that.
And you're also the first German commander of the ISS. This must feel amazing.
Yeah, it's for me, of course, a great honor in a personal way. You could call it my personal horizon that I tried to broaden here because I'm learning how it is to take responsibility for a space vehicle and its crew. But more than that, it's actually a compliment not for me, but for the European Space Agency to be given that responsibility and that trust by their international partners who built the ISS. And that shows you how well integrated the European space flight is. We have missions almost every year. Right now, my colleague Thomas Pesquet from France is on board the space station. Paolo Nespoli is right here with us today at the European Astronaut Center. He will launch soon to the space station, and then it's my turn. So you see there's a really continuity of European space flight on board the ISS, and that shows how important it is. We've heard before that there's been several studies showing that every euro that we invest into the ISS will get back to us with more than twice of that. So it's a very good investment, and I'm happy to play my part in that.
You already mentioned Horizons. That's the name of your 2018 mission. What does Horizons mean to you?
To me, whenever I see a horizon, I wonder what's beyond and how I can get there. It's my curiosity, and I think it's not only mine. I think it's part of our human species. We're explorers. So we want to show that there's many horizons out there that need to be discovered. You could call like the humans an island species. We live on an island in the middle of a black universe, and we must understand our surroundings in order to survive. It's our responsibility for future generations. So we want to show that it's important to look at these horizons. It could be Moon and Mars, who are now only a few days, in case of Moon, only a few days of travel away. That's as much as Antarctica was 100 years ago, and see where Antarctica is now. It actually saves the planet by producing valuable science data for like climate sciences, for example. It's just one of many. And then horizons could be of scientific nature, right? So every scientific experiment that we do, we broaden our scientific horizon, and we kind of step beyond it and find new things that are critically valuable for us down here on Earth. And as the last part, it's also a personal horizon that all of us try to broaden often. And for me, that is taking that responsibility of a commandership of the space station. But also I want to show young people on Earth that it actually pays out. It is an important thing and a very positive thing for them to take responsibility of themselves and their surroundings.
Well, that leads me to my next question. You worked a lot with your last mission with experiments with children. Are there any plans this time to get school children involved?
Yes, absolutely. That's my personal favorite. And we had a competition going. DLR and ESA looked for suggestions for student experiments. We have some from school children, but we also have some from university students this time. Some of them are very sophisticated. Some of them are really scientific experiments. And I'm looking forward to kind of taking part in these and make sure they happen. Unfortunately, I have to use my own free time for it. There's no time planned in the busy schedule of the International Space Station, but I'm sure I will be able to conduct one or two or three of them in my own free time. It's just so much fun to do them, and I'm kind of looking at them like a little child myself. And some of them have had really surprising results that actually scientists at universities now are looking into and use them for their next experiments.
So those experiments that you're undertaking, will we be able to see them on social media, because that also played a big part on your last mission?
Yes, absolutely. For me, it's very important to share all what we do up there. It's a very, very simple reason, just for myself, because if I look at something very beautiful, I always have the urge to share that. It's like this pressure in myself that I want to get rid of. And for me, that's the easiest way. It's just to take a photo of the Earth, of something beautiful, write a few lines and send them down and share them with all my friends and supporters down on Earth, and therefore have them participate on my space mission a little bit. That really helps me. It's a lot of fun.
Gives a whole new meaning to MySpace, doesn't it?
It does.
Alexander Gerst, the first German commander of the ISS, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much. You're very welcome.
Astronaut and Germany's first international space station commander, Alexander Gerst, joining me there. We're coming to you today from the European Space Agency's Astronaut Training Centre in Cologne, Germany. Joining me now to talk about life in space and answer some poignant questions about the cosmos is Thomas Reiter, a former astronaut and now Director for Human Spaceflight and Robotic Exploration at the European Space Agency. Thomas Reiter, welcome to Spectrum. How do you feel today? Is there an element of jealousy when you saw Alexander Gerst just now revealing his mission name and logo?
No, I mean, this is nothing at all related to jealousy. Of course, yes. If I would be asked, I wouldn't have to think twice to fly again. But okay, I mean, this is a change of generations, and now it's the turn of Alex, and there will be a time when Alex will hand over to the next. So this is just normal part of life. And I'm happy for him. I will follow the mission with great interest. In the last mission, he managed to not only inspire all other people, but I think also his colleagues. I enjoyed very much listening to his reports. Every once in a while, even got a phone call. So looking forward to his launch.
But he wasn't the only one to inspire. You also inspired when you were in space. What's so special about being up there and looking down on Earth?
You know, it's not so easy to really bring that all in words, but the fact that you can fly around the Earth 16 times a day, that means 16 sunrises, 16 sunsets in a time warp, overlooking whole continents, for example, Europe, you can overlook completely. When you're on the night side, you see the starry sky very, very clearly. I've never seen such a clear star sky here from Earth. You see beautiful effects like the aurora. You see so-called noctilucent clouds. Taking this all together, it's fascinating. And even though I've been almost a year in space, I can tell you there was not a second of boredom. There is every time you look out of the window, it's fascinating, and you get really this feeling, how can I soak that up?
What was your favorite view when you were whizzing around the Earth?
It's hard to say or to choose one favorite view, but maybe to wrap that up in one impression that I had. Every continent has a kind of specific color. You don't notice it at the beginning, but after a couple of weeks, you see that, you know, when you are coming over the southern part of Africa, it has a specific combination of colors. The northern part of Africa, Asia, Europe, North America, South America, Australia. And I mean, in those days, we didn't have this beautiful cupola, which allows beautiful view. We had smaller windows. But during the day when you were walking, it was sufficient just to have a glance outside, and at least you knew roughly over which continent you are. And I think this is fascinating.
Absolutely. What do you think? What does human space travel mean to you?
Well, I think it's just in our genes to extend our reach beyond the limits of our atmosphere. And I really hope that I can still witness it, maybe then from a chair in front of the TV, to see humans putting their feet again on the moon. And then hopefully I can still witness it, seeing the first humans on Mars. Not because we need to look for another home, but it's just so exciting to explore and to gain new knowledge about those celestial bodies and the developments that took place there. And is that relevant for our own planet here, Earth?
You mentioned there the moon. Do you believe in a moon village?
Oh yes, definitely. The concept is, I think, a very smart approach, because if we think in the classical spaceflight programs, then somebody tells all the participants what to do, what to fabricate, what to deliver, when to deliver. Now, the idea of a village is slightly different. Somebody starts to build one building, let's put it like that. Maybe a church, maybe a town hall. And then others just come around and put other things. And this is the idea behind it. So I think in this difficult world we are living, this really has a good chance to be realized and to grow, and probably is an important step to really colonize the moon.
Just going back to Alexander Gerst, as we mentioned at the start of the interview, what do you think having another German astronaut up in space will mean for research in Germany and Europe?
Well, I think all our six, now seven astronauts show that the investment that has been done in the decades before, I mean, the program, ISS program started mid of the 90s, was really worth it. If you think about the scientific return, the industrial technological return, what it means for society, that has become clear now, or at least clearer than it was before. So each of my colleagues who are now going up there and working and doing all this scientific research, of course, sharing their fascination of the view to our planet and the opposite direction, but also talking about this fascinating work, is something very specific. And Germany, of course, being one of the main investors in the program, of course, for Germany, it's quite important to have exactly this feedback. So also for this reason, we are very happy that Alexander will go up next year.
Absolutely. Thomas Reiter, thank you so much for joining me on Spectrum today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Thomas Reiter, former German astronaut and now director for human spaceflight and robotic exploration at the European Space Agency, joining me there. If you've just tuned in, we're coming to you today from ESA's Astronaut Training Center in Cologne, Germany, where Germany's first International Space Station commander, Alexander Gerst, has just launched the logo and mission name for his 2018 trip. You're listening to Spectrum with me, Jesse Wingard, on DW. Online, you can check us out at dw.com/science, and you can follow all our updates and behind-the-scenes photos from our trip to the European Space Agency today on Twitter at DW_SciTech, and I'm at Jesse Wingard. What then does it take to command a mission? Well, one of the men who nominated Alexander Gerst for the top job, European Space Agency Director General Jan Werner, is here to talk about what those criteria are. Jan Werner, welcome to Spectrum. What does it take to find such a good commander like Alexander Gerst?
You see, to look for astronauts, to have to see what type of quality do we need. For me, it's obvious. If you look to all these astronauts which were selected so far, you have two main qualities you find. I mean, there are a lot of other qualities like scientific understanding, engineering understanding, blah, blah, blah. But two things are for me very important. And one is that they should be ready to take responsibility, to decide something in a difficult situation, and also in this moment to tell other people, now we have to do this or that. This is one quality. And the other quality is to be a team member, to follow, if there is another commander, to follow really the team, to do the best and not saying, okay, I know it better. So these two qualities are important. And Alexander Gerst obviously showed both of these qualities when he was in space for its first time. And so after he came back, Frank de Winne came to me and said, okay, we should propose him as a commander. And I agreed. And then we proposed officially from the European Space Agency to the other partners in the International Space Station that Alex should be the next European commander in the ISS.
What does it mean to have a German commander of the ISS for research not only in Germany but in Europe?
We do not have a German astronaut, we do not have a German commander on the ISS. We have a European astronaut, a European commander, and by chance he has a German passport or a German nationality or a German accent, however you would call it. So for me, of course, I have also a German nationality, but right now I'm the head of the European Space Agency and I'm a European Director General with a German passport. Therefore, I think it's good to have astronauts of different nationalities in Europe, in the European Space Agency, to promote what I call the European spirit, because what we need at these times is some joining ideas, not only ideas we are national number A and national number B, but all of us are Europeans, and the astronauts can really convey the message of a European spirit.
Absolutely. Now, what impact do you think human space travel has on society as a whole?
We are asked frequently, what is the return of investment of human spaceflight? Can you not do it with robots? Of course, many of the experiments which are done, we could, with some restrictions, also do with robotic instruments. However, medical investigations, for instance, blood pressure, immune system, salt regulation, osteoporosis, aging, you need the body, the human body. So we need already the human astronauts for these type of investigations. Another aspect which I always see is that with the astronauts, we bring souls to space. And if they look back to the Earth and report what they are seeing, and this is full of sentiments, then it is even much more than just a picture of the Earth, of the blue dot, which is already impressive. But if it's followed by the personal sentiments of an astronaut, then it gives also us the feeling what they feel. And in addition, astronauts can give us the proof that it makes sense to dream. You can dream something, and if you are strong enough and if you are eager enough, you can realize your dreams.
What a great message to end on. Jan Werner, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
European Space Agency Director General Jan Werner speaking to me there about what it takes to be a mission commander. Yeah. while robots are a much-needed aspect of travelling in space, here on Earth it used to be said that they were edging humans out of production. But now, more and more industry seems to want both robots and humans working together. Man, woman and machine are to be collaborators now. The question is, will we ever learn to love robots? Silvia Kirabani finds a love story waiting to happen. Well, love-hate.
Picture the scene. On the left, there's a huge Kawasaki robot housed in a glass cage. And on the right, outside and looking in, are two ordinary people, a man and a woman, middle-aged. The woman has shortish grey hair and a bewildered look. The man has long grey hair and a bewildered look. Perhaps they're old hippies, the kind who survived and now exist with one foot in the mainstream and another somewhere between here and a recurring trip. In any event, I see them standing there observing this huge automated thing, talking quietly amongst themselves about our human experience with the robots. Well, there's only one thing you can do in a situation like that, and that's join the conversation. So I ask the man, Dieter Grebenetz, how he feels about robots. Does he fear robots?
Nein, ich habe keinen Grund, vor Robotern Angst zu haben.
No, I've no reason to fear robots. I've never had the opportunity to fear them. They're used in industry, but you don't see fully automated machines in daily life.
Im alltäglichen Leben nicht.
His companion, Daniela Runge, on the other hand, finds the mere sight of this huge robot scary.
Oh, jetzt, ja, wenn ich jetzt hier so unmittelbar davor stehe, bin ich nur gerade im Augenblick.
Well, standing in front of it, just the sight scares me, the way it moves. It's got animal characteristics somehow. And then, of course, there's the fear that robots might replace humans. But we were just saying how it reminds us of a dinosaur.
Erinnert an einen Dinosaurier, ne? So ein bisschen.
It's an interesting analogy, and ironic. The idea that this huge robot looks like a dinosaur, when many people feel will go the same way as the dinosaurs went about 65 million years ago, if or when robots get intelligent and cheap enough to replace us. It may be through artificial intelligence or something approaching what we consider to be human intelligence, but some say the age of singularity, as it's sometimes called, is nigh. But back to the now and those robots, humans and industry. Softly spoken, Herr Grebenetz says it all goes back to Marx. Now, don't laugh there. He makes a good point.
Ja, der Mensch in der heutigen Welt oder auch schon.
Humans have been becoming part of the machine since the start of the industrialization of our world. The question now is how we humans can free ourselves, and indeed whether we want to free ourselves at all from this process.
Wie er sich dann noch daraus noch befreien kann.
Just then, a sales executive from Kawasaki asks us to continue our conversation elsewhere, not in front of his robot. When I explain that we're talking about the thing, he concedes, but declines rather rudely, I have to say, to answer any questions himself. So I speak to his colleague, Tobias Kurler, instead. Has our fear of robots got any better, I ask?
I think there are different opinions about robots. Because, of course, I'm selling. I'm a salesman for robotics, and I have to say, don't be worried about the using of robots. But sometimes you find companies, the employees are very afraid if they would use robots, they lose the jobs in this case. But normally it's not true, because our target is to implement robots to make the life easier.
And do you think that this fear has got, you know, people got more understanding now? Has the fear reduced?
Yes, I think the feeling is more acceptable to use robots. Yeah, I think it has to be more accepted in the future, because if you talk about industry 4.0, everything will be connected in the future, and how can you connect a human being with this system? It's impossible. Of course.
But what do they tell you at school? That's right, don't let anyone tell you that anything is impossible. And the problem is that some kids actually believe it. So I'm sure someone, somewhere, will find a way to connect humans to the Internet of Things. I mean, aren't people already talking about an Internet of Us? And the cyborgs? Hey, what about them? Anyway, I take a walk and find a huge crane-like robot gripping a car. Watching it toss the car from side to side is an Indian manufacturer called Nandlal, who runs a plastics recycling plant. He and a colleague, who makes agricultural machinery, they have no qualms about robots.
Nobody.
No worry. You don't worry about jobs disappearing?
No problem. Because man is manufacturing robot.
Ah, okay. Yeah, good.
If man is not, then where is robot? Robot for man's. Man is not for robots.
It's striking, however, how aesthetic some robots have become. Take a look at Sawyer by Rethink Robotics, or The Range from Universal Robots. Both companies work in the field of collaborative robotics, the idea of robots working closely with humans and enabling humans to interact with robots with a simple push or a shove, which, depending on your take, is, yet again, a little ironic. It's also odd to see robots pouring beer from bottles while the bartenders stand nearby chatting or checking their phones. Well, I suppose it's one payoff anyway. But how are you going to pay your phone bill when that friendly robot puts you out of a job? Then there are companies like Taiwan's Techman Robot, which wants collaborative robots to help workers with visual impairment. TM Robots' Judy Chen says making robots more collaborative, bringing them closer to humans, will reduce people's fear eventually.
This robot has AI, okay, intelligence, and he trying to look like the people, like the worker to work. However, it has some limitation, and he helps the people, help the company, help the worker to work dangerous things, and also the boring job. So don't be afraid, he will help you to go to the automation and the people can do the more high-grade job, okay?
You sure that'll be the case, this utopia that we'll be able to do high-grade jobs, we'll earn more money or we'll have more time to do fun things in life? You really think that's going to be...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You are right, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's true.
Okay. I believe this will be coming, okay?
So I have to ask you then, so do you think that if ever there was a fear about robots, do you think that fear is getting less with time now?
Yeah, that's right. I think so. Previously, the industrial robot is kind of the you cannot touch him. And right now, the collective robot, this especially TM robot, you can teach him. You can touch him, teach him easily. And
So in a sense, like through a greater intimacy with robots, we will learn to love them.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Ah. When Human Met Robot. I have to admit, it's a clunky name for a movie, but I fear it may be a love story waiting to happen.
A love story indeed. Sulfika Abani with that report. And that brings us to the end of this special edition of Spectrum from the European Space Agency's Astronaut Training Centre in Cologne, Germany. Thanks to our technician, Gerd Georgi, and thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another packed edition of Spectrum. To keep up to date with all things happening in the science and technology world, check us out on Twitter at @DW_SciTech or online dw.com/science. I'm Jessie Wingard. On Twitter, you can find me at Jessie Wingard, and I'd love to hear from you. From all of us at DW, have a wonderful week ahead. Seek.
space.